right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. When I saw Stu today, the first thing Stu said to me, besides, hey, how you doing, how was your weekend, was you were right. And I'm like, what was I right about? Because there's probably a lot with this weekend that I was wrong about. And he goes, you said whenever there's a weekend that people tell you it's a down weekend in college football, it always ends up being the weekend that's the most chaotic and the best one. And going into this weekend, there were a lot of matchups that weren't like, Like we were talking about it, how nationally most people thought A&M Missouri was the best matchup. And I was like, hey, if you want a game that's just going to be close and sloppy and ugly, but it may be fun, like you can make a case that Nebraska and Rutgers was like one of the featured matchups of the weekend. And neither of those teams are ranked, actually. And that game ended up being sloppy and ugly. It really was. But what transpired this weekend in college football, it is like something that I've never seen before. And you know what Alabama had? Alabama had what the Pac-12 used to be, and how I described now how the Big 12 is, a Pac-12 type of loss. Alabama had a tremendous, unbelievable, fantastic win up against Georgia. The win of the college football season. It was sensational. Heck, we had Kalen DeBoer on a week ago. He joined us on Monday after the big win up against Georgia. And I think we talked about Vanderbilt for maybe 5 seconds. Because it was all about Georgia, beating Georgia. And I even said to him at one point, Coach, I was asking him a question about something. And I go, I know that you're focused on the next one. You're focused on Vanderbilt. But no one in a million years would have told you that Vanderbilt was going to beat Alabama or even be in a game against Alabama. And I'm at a wedding on Saturday night. And my buddy turns to me and he goes, hey, it's 13-0. Vanderbilt on top of Alabama in the first quarter. I go, oh, we've seen this before. Maybe not for Vanderbilt up against Alabama, but we've seen the smaller school, you know, the inferior school, the inferior opponent up against the big bad school. And it's not like the number one team in the nation couldn't come back. And it's crazy. Through the entirety of that game, even when they were down like 12 with 3 or 4 minutes to go and they quickly scored that touchdown, I still thought they were coming on back. But when Vanderbilt is running around the field, their own field afterwards celebrating, you couldn't even write that script if you tried. Because no one would have believed it. No one would have thought that was even a possibility. You know, when I was in college, this is how bad Vanderbilt has been. And I know Temple had a good run when I was at Temple. But Temple went to Vanderbilt, and they beat Vanderbilt. A little American Athletic Conference school named Temple University, the Owls at Temple, beat the big bad SEC, even though for a while it's the worst that the SEC has to offer in Vanderbilt. That was like 2014, I think. Maybe 2015. And now Vanderbilt, I know the take is all about Alabama this, Alabama that, where a week ago it's, oh, Kalen DeBoer is the man. Oh, Jalen Milroe is the man. Ryan Williams is a sensation. And all those things still may be true. But this is the first time since Nick Saban has departed where the Alabama fan is like, yep, Saban wouldn't have lost that game. Or that's a moment that doesn't look Saban-like. And it's wild because just a week ago, everyone was saying, including yours truly, up. Oh, it only took a few games, only took a month for Alabama to be restored nationally in the college football world, having a Heisman hopeful, having the number one team in the country, and a coach that kicks everyone's ass, right? All those takes, though, poof, they evaporate into thin air, even if they still may be true later down the road, after losing to Vanderbilt. And the Vanderbilt schedule this year and their games this year, like, I don't even know how to describe it. Look at this roller coaster ride for Vanderbilt. They beat Virginia Tech to start the year. That's a good win. I know Virginia Tech isn't as strong as I thought they were going to be before the season started, but Vanderbilt being an ACC school is still nothing that you just go, oh, you know, whatever. They beat Virginia Tech in overtime. after they had a big lead and then blew it, and then they won the game in overtime, and they stopped drones late. Then they played Alcorn State. They won 55-0. What did Am do? Vanderbilt then lost to Georgia State. Georgia State. They lost 36-32. Then they bounce back the next weekend, even in a loss, and they lose to Missouri, who's at number 7 in the country at the time, in double overtime. They lose by a field goal. And then the following week, they beat the number 1 team in the country in Alabama. Stu, I've seen a lot of weird things in sports. When you've defeated Virginia Tech and you lose to Georgia State, and then you almost take down Missouri, and then you beat Alabama, I'm supposed to describe things on the radio? I can't describe that. That's just stupid. That's really stupid when you take a look at what transpired there. Like, I'm sitting there at this wedding, and I had enough Maker's Mark, if I'm being honest. I had enough Yinglings and Coronas as well. And I had to put the game on. Because eventually there's a time where you're looking and you're like, oh, this is getting late in this game. Oh, this is getting intriguing. And even when the game ended, I'm like sitting there and I'm like, Vanderbilt just beat Alabama? Like, I know I was having some fun at this wedding. But nah, like, I know I'm a little intoxicated, but it's still, like, that's not even believable. And I kept on sitting there saying, Vanderbilt just beat Alabama? Alabama just lost to Vanderbilt? Even still when I say it 2 days after the game, I still can't believe it. I was on yesterday doing a Sunday morning football. And I must have said in the first 15-minute segment, even when I say Vanderbilt defeated Alabama, an alarm goes off in my head. Like, Zach, maybe you misspoke. But that's what did transpire, Stu. I can't even believe it 2 days later.
It's pretty unbelievable. And it was at a time where I was watching the end of the Mets game and the beginning of the Yankees game. There's a bit of an overlap. So I was watching mostly that.
You only got one TV set up?
I have two. Okay. So I was watching those two. And then the Mets game ended. And I'm like, okay, let's look for a college football game to watch.
Oh, that you direct all your attention.
Yes. And then I was like, wait a second. They're losing 13-0? How is that possible? Like, no. And then I turned it on and watched it. But I watched it, and I almost still can't believe it.
Yeah, and you know what? That weekend, even though it was, you know, at night, the weekend in college football was just bonkers. So you have Bama and Vanderbilt. You know, before I get to the rest of the weekend and give you my thoughts, let's play their quarterback, Diego Pavia. He was so emotional on ESPN after the win and the SEC Network. You got to listen to this audio. Listen up. Here's the quarterback.
Look at this. Look at this. Daddy, what hurt?
Diego, what were you saying to your team to finish this game?
Games like this change your life. You know what I mean? It's all about hype nowadays. And I don't like it like that, but it's a reality of NAL and all that stuff. But, you know, just stay grounded. Be where my feet are. And every single day tomorrow, I got to work on Kentucky.
You had 70 family members here. What did it mean to do this in front of them?
Where they at? Where they at? Where's the family? Where's the family? Come on.
That's awesome. And he was at New Mexico State the last few years. And now he's the quarterback at Vanderbilt. When he transferred to Vanderbilt, did anyone think they were going to beat Alabama? No. That's wild. You also got to see why Missouri's just not as good as what people thought they were. Now, to get to these other games, it's like a few weeks ago we asked the question, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Missouri, who's the best out of those three? We just saw Ole Miss lose last week to Kentucky. We will get to Tennessee and their performance against Arkansas in just a bit. And then Missouri not only loses to A&M, they get blown out by A&M. And you know what? Let me give credit to Mike Elko. Because I think things get misconstrued when I talk about A&M. I like Mike Elko. I just hated how the A&M fans vehemently opposed the potential hire of Mark Stoops. But you had Marcel Reed playing when Wegman was hurt. There was that conversation, would they go back to Wegman? They did. And Connor Wegman was awesome. And A&M ran the football as well and just pounded Missouri. But A&M, you look at their schedule now, especially with how it's a down year for college football in terms of, man, there's a lot of teams that are racking up losses already. And we had a conversation in a 12-team college football playoff. Would a three-loss team get in? You may get a three-loss team in this year with some of these early upsets and early surprises. But A&M in week one, they were so flat. Like, Stu, you saw it at A&M at College Station against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame isn't even all that good. And Notre Dame didn't even play a great game, and they still beat A&M. And to see that A&M team a month later crush at the time the ninth-best team in the country, 41-10, that speaks to the coach that Mike Elko could be. Now, I can still have a problem with the process at A&M, but Elko knew that school was their DC, then was at Duke. I like Elko. And they went to the Swamp a few weeks ago. I know Florida stinks, but they blew them out. You beat Arkansas last week, and then you just really took it to Missouri. And you know when I liked A&M in that game? I took a look at the line, and you have a top 25 team, you know, in A&M, 25th in the country, but they were going up against number 9 Missouri, and even though A&M was home, they were only a 2.5-point favorite. I felt like that line was trying to mislead people and having them plus the money on Missouri, and that's just the way that I look at it, and I ended up thinking A&M was going to win that game outright. But what an impressive statement by A&M. We'll keep it moving. Tennessee, Arkansas. Very disappointing performance by Tennessee. And you know what's kind of weird? With Tennessee, it was always, was their defense going to be good enough? And there was a lot of confidence with the offense. The defense was fine. The offense just let them down. And at the end of the game, Iamaliava, he's got to throw the ball. He ran out of bounds. And I know Milton did something similarly in recent years too. So I just didn't get that one. And then Michigan loses to Washington, and USC falls to Minnesota, where they originally said that on the push play that Minnesota was short, but he was clearly in my opinion. So you had five teams in the top 11 lose this weekend. USC, with Lincoln Riley, who's overrated, lose to Mr. Row Your Boat and PJ Fleck. Michigan, even though they had a nice win up against USC, it just shows you that Michigan, with what they did up against Texas, that's truer who they are. When you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a lot of chance of having success. So good win for Jed Fish in Washington. Tennessee goes down to Arkansas. Missouri gets blown out by A&M. And Alabama, the Alabama Crimson Tide, lose to Vanderbilt. So I was looking at the AP Top 25 poll. Here's what I don't get. So if you want to tell me that Penn State is better than Alabama in the rankings, okay. I even talked to Hickey during the break. Would you put Alabama behind Penn State like the AP did? And he is Mr. Penn State propagandist. He even said no. But okay, at least Penn State is undefeated. At least Oregon is undefeated. And even though I think Alabama is better than Miami, at least Miami is undefeated. The AP makes no sense to me. So they have Texas 1, Ohio State 2. That was expected. Oregon 3 expected. I didn't know if Penn State was going to get to 4, but they're undefeated. Okay, Penn State at 4. How do you put Georgia at 5, at 4-1, and how do you put Miami at 6-6-0, but then you put Alabama 7th at 4-1? Alabama beat Georgia. So I get it. The Georgia loss isn't as bad as Alabama losing to Vanderbilt, but then Vanderbilt beating Alabama, what does that make it say about Alabama, who Georgia couldn't beat? So that to me is funky when Alabama and Georgia have the same record. It's not the first time this happened, but Alabama isn't ranked higher than Georgia because they lost to an unranked Vanderbilt team. And quite frankly, we'll find out a lot about Oregon this weekend and Penn State because they go up against one another. Texas has a big boy win. I know Michigan is down, but they blew out Michigan in the Big House. Penn State still got to show me something against a competent opponent. I know they crushed West Virginia, so give them credit. But ever since then, I think they've been playing with some fire. Georgia barely beat Kentucky and lost to Alabama. Miami, I forgot about the Miami game. They were down 25 points to Cal. And Cal couldn't even get that game. It's like you look at the results this weekend. I didn't like going to 12 teams. I think it's too many. But everything is shaping out for college football to win this year with this 12-team format. Because there's a lot of really good teams that are losing. And I don't know if, like, right now, I think Ohio State will be a great team this year. Texas has showed you they could be a great team. But I don't know how many great teams you have in college football. And I went through it based off the AP rankings. When I'm just looking at the Associated Press poll. And I put together, based off those rankings with the college football playoff format, what this 12-team college football playoff would look like if it started today. Your conference champions. Texas would win the SEC right now, they'd be one. Ohio State would be the Big Ten, they'd be two. Miami would win the ACC, they'd be three. Matt Campbell and Iowa State would win the Big 12, they'd be four. Those would be your four byes. Then based off the rankings, Oregon 5 would host Boise State. Boise State almost beat Oregon this year. Penn State would host Clemson in a 6-11 game. Here comes Dabo Sweeney. Georgia 7 would host Ole Miss 10. And Alabama 8 would host Tennessee 9. Now, I know a lot of these teams that I just mentioned play one another. And they got tougher games still on their schedule. But that's how we sit right now on October 7th, based off the AP poll, what the 12 teams and who the 12 teams and what the matchups would be in the college football playoff. Just simply unbelievable. So much for that being a down weekend in college football. Huh. That was something. But how many teams in the top 10, top 11 did go down? That was awesome. An awesome weekend. And once again, I still can't believe that Alabama lost to Vanderbilt. Just can't believe it. It is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll take your calls next. 855-212-4227 if you want to jump in. 855-212-4227. We come on back. The Chiefs are the number one team in the AFC. Who's the number two team in the AFC? Is it the Texans? Is it the Ravens? Do you still give Buffalo a shot? We'll get to that next. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Who has the best chance this year to prevent the Chiefs from representing the AFC in the Super Bowl? Ravens, Bills, or Texans are the three choices that I put on there. And I couldn't even think of a fourth team to put down. And I didn't even feel great about putting the Bills there because the last 2 weeks, the Bills have been crap. But you can't put the Jets. You can't put the Dolphins. You know, I know the Broncos are 3-2, but let's pump the brakes. The Chargers are 2-2. You know, maybe. You know, assuming that Herbert gets healthy. Steelers are fraudulent. Browns stink. Bengals stink. So it's like, who else are you going with? But right now, those early returns in that poll question, which you can find on my Twitter page, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Who has the best chance this year to prevent the Chiefs from representing the AFC in the Super Bowl? 51.4% say the Ravens, 33.8% say the Texans, and 14.9% say the Buffalo Bills. Now, let's just spend a moment talking about the Bills. There's 32 seconds left in that game. The Bills came back to tie things up after having a very underwhelming first half. The Bills are basically making Josh Allen, and I know his stats didn't read well yesterday, but they're basically saying, you're going to have to carry us to victory. It is first and 10 for the Buffalo Bills at their own 3. You got to run the ball in this spot. And I know that the Texans had their timeouts, but doing 3 passing plays made no sense to me. And is there a good chance you could get into field goal range with 32 seconds left? Yeah, maybe if you want to pass on the first play, you hit a big play, okay. But when you don't hit on the first play, you got to run the ball. And the Bills didn't do that. They elected to throw on second and third down. And then the Texans got the ball back, completed one pass, burned the timeout, and then kicked the field goal and won the game. Here's why you got to run the ball in that spot. If you're just going to throw the ball over and over and over again in 32 seconds from your own 3, and you don't complete one of those passes, like it's one thing to throw it, you don't complete one of those passes, you then create a very tough situation for your punter. Because your punter can't get a full delivery and a full windup on his punt and go through his full routine because he doesn't want to get the ball blocked and you are so close to where the ball is snapped to the end zone that you don't have a margin for error without costing your team the game. So Sean McDermott has had some blunders coaching this team. Man, it's not the same as the decision to not squib it and your defense choking with 13 seconds left, because that was a playoff game in the divisional round where you had Kansas City on the ropes. But for an isolated spot, that is just saying to the Texans, hey, you let us come back in this game. C.J. Stroud had some boneheaded decisions, the intentional grounding, you know, the turnovers, and he finally looked like a young quarterback, which he hasn't for most of his career, the year plus, the year and a half in the league, whatever it is. But for McDermott yesterday, he had an opportunity for people to talk about Buffalo differently, going into Houston and stealing that game. And when he had it in his hands and had a chance to get to overtime and go get a W, he was basically like, nope, it's hot potato. Oh, this is a win. Let me throw that W right back to the Texans. Here is Sean McDermott on the clock management at the end of the game.
And when you talk about holding three timeouts, where we were, they've got a really strong leg field goal kicker. We knew that. Now, there's a potential, you know, if the situation goes three straight runs, you're running 6 seconds off potentially each time, and you may be in a similar situation, you know. So either way, we got to do a better job, and that starts with me 100%.
Oh, boy. That's – I get he could say it starts with me, that's 100%, but Sean McDermott, you did a great job in building the Bills back up. Like, Sean McDermott is a good football coach. But you reach a limit. Like, building up this team, marvelous. Getting this team to be a consistent contender, marvelous. But now they're stuck. And the Bills and the Pegula family are afraid what life is like without Sean McDermott. And that skepticism to get rid of him and that fear and that apprehension of seeing what life is like, you know, without him is going to prevent this team from taking that next step forward. The other storyline here was, of course, Stephon Diggs. Now, Stephon Diggs, I thought he was going to get a touchdown in this game because I thought he would be so selfish where he'd basically tell, hey, C.J. Stroud, you want me to behave this year? Get me a touchdown. Now, he did lead the team in receiving yards, 6 receptions for 82 yards, but he gets his revenge as the Houston Texans get the win over the Buffalo Bills. Here is Stephon Diggs on what it meant to him to beat the Bills.
Honestly, it meant a lot to me. Held it in all week, energy-wise. Try not to bring it up too much. Obviously, we had an interview earlier in the week. I just try to keep it professional, but obviously, in the back of my mind, it meant a lot to me, and I wanted to do more showing than telling. I'm not going to sit here and act like it was just regular. You know, it meant a lot to me, and it was reassuring that the guys around me knew that it meant a lot to me, even if I didn't say it, you know, because I try to just keep it poised and treat every week like it's the same, you know what I'm saying? But I'd be lying if I said it didn't mean a lot to me.
I appreciate that honesty. Because sometimes he could be a little bit phony, you know, blaming the Vikings for what happened at the end, blaming the Bills for what happened at the end, and basically making it seem like Buffalo, that he broke up with Buffalo and Buffalo didn't break up with him. But you knew that that game meant more to him. Whether he's in the right or wrong is a different topic. But I appreciate him at least acknowledging that it's not player speak where it's like, oh, yeah, no, any given Sunday, you know, that game is just as important as a game 4 or 5 weeks from now. It obviously meant more to Stephon Diggs. Here is Josh Allen on losing to Stephon Diggs. Let's hear what the Bills quarterback sounded like.
No, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not on social media. I don't see any of that. Understand he's on their team. He's a great player. He made some good plays tonight for them, and he was on the winning team. And, you know, came down to a last-second field goal and something that, you know, we're going to have to learn from and grow from.
Come on. Not on social media and all that stuff. Hey, Josh Allen, Zach Gelb here, Buffalo News. WGR, at least I know a publication there. Why do you really hate Stephon Diggs? Why does Stephon Diggs really hate you? You guys used to be like best buds. What happened? Just wondering. I want to know. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. Uh-oh. Adam from Toronto is on the line. Big Bills fan. Adam, go ahead.
Zach. I hope you're ready to suit up in New York this week because you and I are going to go play wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills, because that's who Josh Allen might as well be throwing to. Before I get to Sean McDermott, I'm going to rip into the wide receiver board. Mack Hollins, bum. Curtis Samuel, bum. Whatever, I'm the biggest Dolphins Gage fan. I don't know what's happening with him. Keon Coleman looks too slow for the NFL. Like, he's throwing to nobody. he completed 4 of 18 passes to wide receivers yesterday, and at least half of them were just either the wide receiver running the wrong route or dropped. It was disgusting to watch. Let me get to Sean McDermott. Zach, before the season started, I called you. I said, Sean McDermott is not a top 10 coach. And you know what? I'm going to take that back. He is a top 10 coach. He's a great coach until 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter in a tight game when his brain shuts off completely. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. What happens when you fool me 6 or 7 times? Let me go through this. The Hail Mary game, the Tennessee game a couple years ago, the Denver game with too many men on the field, the Eagles game, icing the kicker in the rain from a 60-yard field goal, and then you mentioned it from the top, the Kansas City game. When does this end, Zach? When does it end? Because Josh Allen will never hold up the Lombardi Trophy with his bozo coaching him. I don't get it. I don't get where his brain goes with 2 minutes left in the fourth minute. It is the most frustrating thing in the world to watch. You know it's bad when Scott Hansen on Red Zone is losing his mind. It's horrible, man. I am so frustrated, as you can tell.
So let me try to uplift you here, Adam. If they your wish, let's say they give you your wish and they get rid of Sean McDermott, who you called Sean McDummy, and I even had to chuckle at that, even though I like Sean McDermott. And you know why they have not fired him yet. It's because from 2000 to 2016, they didn't make the playoffs one time. Ever since he's got there, he's only missed the playoffs once, and they've been a consistent team. But if they want to take that next step, I do agree and acknowledge that you were right. I think they have to move on. Do you think this team would bring in Bill Belichick?
Oh, man. I can't answer that. That would be...
Do you want to win? Because Bill needs talent.
I do. I do. And he's got talent. The Bills have talent. And mm-hmm. I have a franchise quarterback. But the problem is, I think the Bills need an offensive-minded head coach, and Bill's a defensive-minded guy.
Okay.
But I would love...
Can I throw out one defense? I'll give you one more defensive name.
Sure.
Because the offensive-minded coaches, they're all crapshoots. You don't have a proven offensive guy that is available out there right now. Like, you could talk about the Lions offensive coordinator. You never know the jump from going from an OC to a head coach.
Right.
Would Mike Vrabel get the job done for you?
I would love Mike Vrabel. He knows how to manage a clock with 2 minutes left. He would not have let that happen yesterday. And he sure as hell wouldn't have let the 13-second game happen. I don't think any coach lets that happen. But I've been a big fan of Mike Vrabel. He's an expert when it comes to milking the clock and managing the clock.
So,
Mike Vrabel.
If you want to save this team in season now, and I like Brandon Bean a lot, friend of the show.
Go
get Davante Adams.
They have to do something, Zach, because he's throwing to nobody right now, especially when there's injuries to Khalil Shakir, man.
Yeah,
Khalil Shakir is the only guy that he trusts, man. And it was obvious. You could see it in the numbers even. That's not Josh Allen. Josh Allen isn't 9 for whatever he was. That's a bad game, but he's got nobody to throw to, and he doesn't trust anybody. And there was, even when he was throwing a guy, Zach, there was no separation. It was just a short little throw, and then they get tackled. There's just no separation between wide receivers and the defensive team. It's crazy, man. So I would love Davante Adams. I'd love Alvin Kamara. I'd love anybody at this point. Anybody that can help out that wide receiver room, man.
Now, can I get underneath your skin here before I let you run?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
How about Doug Peterson? He may need a job in a few weeks. Adam, appreciate it. Thanks so much. Let's go to Xander in Kansas City next up on the show. Xander, who do you think is the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs? Just wondering.
Biggest threat has got to be the Baltimore Ravens. If I'm a Kansas City Chiefs, the one team that I don't want to see when it comes down to it is the Baltimore Ravens. And it's because of what your guy that was just on about the Bills just talked about. It's because when it comes down to being able to control a game, now, I know we just beat the Ravens, but it came down to the last second. It wasn't like it was a blowout. It was a good game. And the Ravens are going to get better, and they're showing they're getting better as the season going on. And the last person I want to see in the fourth quarter when it comes to trying to get the ball back to Patty is Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson with the ball. right, because of that run game. And lastly, before I let you go, if there's one thing I could promise you, Davante Adams isn't going anywhere near Buffalo. If there's one place Davante Adams isn't going, it's Buffalo. So we can get that out of our minds. But because the Bills just are horrendous. The coaching is horrendous. Josh Allen, he doesn't have any help, but it's not going to come in the form of Davante Adams. I appreciate the call.
You got it, Xander. And I don't think Davante Adams is going there, but you should try. I wouldn't say the Bills are horrendous. Now, Sean McDermott has some blunders, obviously, but Josh Allen, to me, is still a top three quarterback in the NFL. You know what, though? I do think the answer to this question right now, who has the best chance this year to prevent the Chiefs from representing the AFC in the Super Bowl, Ravens, Bills, or Texans? It's actually the Ravens. And I'll take it a step further. There's not a lot of great MVP candidates this year because it's usually a quarterback award at the quarterback position. Derrick Henry should get some MVP play. Right now, with what I've seen so far in the NFL, if I'm picking an MVP right now in the league, it is actually Derrick Henry. And the Ravens, a lot of us are like, oh, we're not going to buy back in on them when the season ended last year because they had this great regular season. They failed in the postseason. The Ravens have a different feel with Henry as their running back because that's so tough to defend. You control so much of the clock, and you could race out to these big leads with the Baltimore Ravens, and the defense is still good even with the changes on the defensive side of the ball. And Harbaugh's a professional coach. I know we said last year, if it's not now, then it's never. But really, for the Ravens, if it's not now, it's never. And I did pick the Ravens before the year to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC. Don't ask me my NFC prediction. It was the LA Rams, but they've been hurt. So I would go Ravens 1, Texans 2, and actually the Bills 3. And I know a few weeks ago I said the Bills are the best team in the league, but what they've done the last 2 weeks, I thought they were going to lose to the Ravens. That Texans game, it's not that they lost, it's how they lost. It was McDermott just giving the game away. So the returns in that poll right now, 51% say the Ravens, 33.3% say the Texans, and 15.6% say the Bills. We will do onside, offside next. Update time first, though. Here is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
All right, Stu, show me what you got. What do we got cooking today?
All right. Now, after the Steelers started 3-0, some called for Mike Tomlin to name Justin Fields the full-time starter at the quarterback position.
Me.
But now, after two straight losses, the door seems to be wide open again for Russell Wilson to take the job once he's healthy. Onsides, offsides, once healthy, Russell Wilson should start for the Steelers.
I'm still going to go offside. I do believe eventually, right, since the Steelers are keep on kind of operating with kid gloves with Russell Wilson, that they will give Russell Wilson an opportunity. But when I watch the Steelers, I don't think the biggest problem right now is the quarterback. I know it's what we most obsess over, saying they need a quarterback, they need a quarterback, they need a quarterback, but this line is not good. George Pickens thinks he's a stud, and he's not. He doesn't create enough separation. They're missing Jaylen Warren right now. You know, this team has a lot of problems on the offense side of the ball. I still think that Russell Wilson or Justin Fields is a higher upside now in the year of 2024 than Russell Wilson, but I do believe he'll eventually get that opportunity to play, you know, down the road. But when you say once healthy, Russell Wilson should start for the Steelers, I'm not ready to say that yet. I will go offside.
Offside!
After a slow start to the season that saw him average under 135 yards in his first two games with no touchdowns and two picks, Caleb Williams has caught fire. The number one overall pick now has two 300-yard performances in his last three games with five touchdowns and two interceptions after yesterday's impressive performance against the Panthers. Onsides, offsides, you still believe Caleb Williams will be the best quarterback in this year's draft?
So I had Caleb ranked 1 and Jaden ranked 2. But I kept on saying how much I really like Jaden Daniels. Ooh. Caleb Williams, I think the earlier part of the season was more so a proper representation of the organization rather than Caleb Williams. Jaden Daniels, though, I think the recent history matters. Like, I know Caleb Williams won a Heisman and Jaden Daniels won a Heisman. And they both transferred into their last stops of USC and LSU. And I know that Jaden Daniels didn't, you know, win LSU, and Caleb Williams didn't win at USC either. But what Jaden Daniels is able to do coming over from Arizona State, where he was at, compared to where Caleb Williams is coming over from Oklahoma, yeah, it's more impressive with Jaden Daniels. So I'm actually going to say, and I know it's only five games in, I think both are going to be really damn good. But I think Jaden Daniels is just a little bit better. So you still believe Caleb Williams will be the best QB in this draft? Not like Caleb's going to be bad, but I think Jaden's better, so I will go offside.
Offside!
All right, my Raiders, they finally lost patience with quarterback Gardner Minshew benching him in yesterday's game.
That was a big sigh that you let out there.
Yeah, after a stupid throw that led to a 100-yard pick six by Patrick Surtain.
I had the Raiders yesterday at +3.5. When they're up 10-0, I'm like, not even saying they're going to win the game, but I at least thought they would cover being a 3.5-point dog. And they didn't do that.
They're up 10-0 and inside the 10-yard line about to score to make it 17-0 against the Broncos. Yes.
Well, like you're playing the 85 Bears or the 2007 Patriots. Come on.
Well, Aiden O'Connell came on in relief but completed just 50% of his passes with an interception of his own. And head coach Antonio Pierce today said there is no decision on who will start against the Steelers this Sunday. Onside to offside.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, no decision yet. Onside to offsides. The Raiders should start O'Connell in their next game.
Well, O'Connell sucks. Minshew sucks. So we'll see who we're going to throw out there is pretty much what the coach is saying. I would say yes onside. And I even thought it was a mistake before the season started playing and saying that Minshew was going to be the starter and that he won the job. It wasn't like anyone ever thought Minshew was going to be their guy long term. Minshew is a really good backup. He could start some games and have some energy and look competent. But for Aiden O'Connell, not that I think he's the guy, but where the Raiders are, at least show that he's not the guy and let him start the season and then go to Minshew if he needed to. But they did that backwards. I do think they'll start O'Connell, and I think they should start O'Connell. But I don't think it's going to be all that different. But yeah, I would go onside. It can't get any worse than what you saw yesterday.
Cannot get much worse.
Oh, good. Hopefully not.
Boise State superstar running back Ashton Jeanty joined the show last week and set this lofty goal for himself.
Yeah, 267, opened up the season, 6 touchdowns. 192 rushing yards against Oregon, 3 rushing touchdowns. 127 rushing yards up against Portland State. And this past week up against Washington State, 259 yards and 4 touchdowns. What's in store for this week? Jeez, it's been unbelievable. What are we thinking?
I'm thinking, you know, something along those lines. You know, that's the standard now as an offense is, you know, I would say 150 to 200 plus rushing yards a game. You know, that's what we've been putting up. So, you know, that's what we got to keep doing.
Now, Jeanty more than lived up to that standard, rushing for 186 yards and 3 more touchdowns.
In a half on 13 carries.
In a half. He is now on pace for 2,474 yards and could certainly challenge the great Barry Sanders' single-season record of 2,628 yards in 1988. Onside to offsides, Jeanty has leapfrogged both Jalen Milroe and Travis Hunter as the Heisman favorite.
He has in the odds. He's +225 to win the Heisman. Hunter's +350. Milroe fell down to 1,000 after that performance. And Cam Ward's now at +450. And yeah, it should be Ashton Jeanty. It's who's the most outstanding player in college football. With what I've seen this year, it's either Jeanty or Travis Hunter. Those are the two most outstanding players because of Hunter's ability to play both ways. But when Jenty's on pace for all those yards that you just said, and also 38 rushing touchdowns, you know, imagine they let him play the second half. And I'll say this for Boise State fans too. I know everyone's going to talk about Jeanty. I think the most impressive part of that game, and I get it's only Utah State, they finally displayed a passing attack. And the goal for Boise State is to get in the college football playoff. Madsen was 21-25 for 256 yards and 3 touchdowns. Impressive performance by him as Boise State wins 62-30. So when you ask me, Jeanty is leapfrog, Jalen Milroe and Travis Hunter as the Heisman favorite? Yeah, he has in my mind. Onside, I would say right now it's Jeanty 1, Hunter 2. If I had to give my ballot today, I'd put Ward, Cam Ward 3 after Miami had that comeback, even though they looked like he was about to just get, you know, plummet right down the Heisman odds, and then Milroe loses to Vanderbilt. So those would be the three names right now.
Now, South Carolina got smoked by Ole Miss 27-3 on Saturday, but that didn't stop Gamecocks defensive end Dylan Stewart from maybe the worst sack celebration ever. After taking down Jackson Dart, Stewart used his hands to mimic shooting Dart with a machine gun, while the quarterback laid on the ground. Onside's offside, Stewart should be suspended at least one game for his actions.
So he's a freshman. It's stupid. You shouldn't be celebrating a sack in that spot when you're down 27-3, and you can't use a, you know, an air gun, let's just say, to then direct it at the quarterback. I'm not condoning what he did. I just don't think he needs to be suspended. I don't. You handle that internally. You could punish him internally. I don't think you need to suspend a kid for a game for doing that. I don't think he did that. And he's like, oh, like I'm literally shooting Jackson Dart. And I know people turn that into a gun debate and all that stuff. And I'm not going to do that here. It was stupid what he did. I don't think you need to sit him down for a game. Let Shane Beamer handle that internally. So Stewart should be suspended at least one game for his actions. I will go offside.
Offside.
All right, last one here. The MLB playoffs are off to an exciting start, mostly because of your Mets. Now, yesterday, for the fourth time in seven games, the Mets tied a game or took the lead in the eighth inning or later, this time with Mark Vientos hitting a game-time two-run homer in the top of the ninth before failing in the bottom of the ninth on a Nick Castellanos game winner. Onsides, offsides, it's dangerous for the Mets to keep relying on these type of late-game heroics if they want to win the World Series.
Sure, onsides, but how else are they going to rely on things to win a World Series? Or even win this series? The bats have played well. You know, I knew in Game 1 they just needed to get to the bullpen, and once Wheeler came out, they would expose, the Phillies a little bit. And in Game 2, they were up 3-0. They were down, then they came back, and all that. It was tremendous, but the Mets are not built to win a World Series this year. So you need magic, and that's something that we've seen teams have a magical ride all the way to the World Series, sometimes win it. And the Mets have certainly had that magic. So is it dangerous? Yes. Does it mean that they could come up with another way to win with the way that this team is constructed? No. But I'll answer the question with how it's asked. And yeah, of course it's dangerous. Man, I was moving off the couch yesterday in the eighth or ninth inning, like, fully on the floor. Oh, that was a rough one. Motions were shot yesterday. Thank God I had some Chinese food. Oh, those scallion pancakes really helped. And those soup dumplings too were really good. The General Tso's chicken helped get the pain away a little bit. Let's bounce back tomorrow and have the Mets go up 2-1.